see if this is, you want to say anything in there?
What do you mean?
Well, I wanted to do the interview, to hear the volume.
Oh, yeah, testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, see if you got a level. Yeah, actually, I don't like to tape in the show. I really dislike that when people bring tape recorders, I'll tell you that.
Okay, well, I won't tell you.
Online interviews and stuff, but when I do new songs, they aren't copywritten, and I'm out on the road, and somebody, you know, takes them, and there's all kinds of possibilities that somebody hears a tape you trade and finds that it isn't copywritten yet, and they...
Well, first, so you never tell anyone that it's not copywritten there, because I copyright stuff as well, you know, articles and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, all the stuff I place with
okay.
is copywritten, but I just, it's not a good idea, but thanks that...
Well, are you going to do anything this next set?
I just hate the idea of
okay.
being a tape
okay.
recorder. I'm not in the
It's
situation.
Just that I was going to, you know, a couple people, I said, he's finally coming here, I'll make you something in exchange for the stuff you gave.
It's not a place that I'm hearing myself well or I'm
okay.
at my best. I mean,
okay.
It's like being caught naked when you don't want to be.
True. It's just that, you know.
I think in general it's a bad policy.
Okay. Well, I won't tape it. It's just that most of us have been waiting for a long while, you know, for a record.
Me too.
Well, how about that? What has happened with that then?
I was talking to people that right now the record business is pretty much in as bad a state of depression as the automobile or the steel industry. So who knows? You know, if I had sold a lot of records before, it'd be easier for me to get a deal. But I tend to be fairly eclectic in what I write. And I haven't supported the records well enough on the road. Because I'm primarily a writer, and I prefer to write. It takes a lot of time to come up with good ideas, and even longer to turn the good ideas into good songs. Some people have the ability to do it out on the road. I think Bruce Springsteen does, and I really admire him for being able to do that.
Do you like his new stuff? Have you heard that new album he's done?
I haven't heard Nebraska. I really liked it. I've read some of the lyrics, and I love the idea. I think the guy's got as much guts as anybody in the business. You know, be able to break his patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of thing that Dylan did. It takes a lot of courage because he's making a lot of money to go to a four-track
yeah.
studio and put down what you really feel about America and your own position in it. And
don't you think he's sort of doing the same old thing, the old Badlands, Charles Stark weather type thing, always, you know, get in my car and drive out with my girl.
I haven't heard that record, so I can't really comment on that, but it's...
Well, I mean, that whole idea, you know.
He's talking about essentially an intrinsic nature in America, you know, and as he sees it. I mean, that's essentially what he writes about. I'm not able or willing to judge him as a writer. I think he's a good writer. Time will decide if he's a great writer, in the same way it'll decide Dylan is a great writer.
It just seemed like you're familiar with Meeting Across the River, aren't you? That tune off Born to Run?
No, to be honest with you, I listen to it in small bits and pieces.
Okay, well, he had one tune that I really thought lyrically he was taking off. And then he seemed to go back to the car stuff type thing. I mean, I've been a fan of his since 73. I used to see him at the Main Point
uh-huh.
way back when, so I've followed uh-huh. him a long while, but I haven't liked him too recently.
Try not to listen to anyone too seriously. I let an album go by and listen to it and like it and listen to it in sort of a blank way so that I don't get affected by it. I don't like being affected by other people's work unless they're of another generation or of another complete framework.
Okay, let me...
You can hear it, isn't
it? Yeah.
You can hear enough to fix the voice.
I guess start... One of the singles I had in there that I wanted to ask you about, I've been waiting for, is the bar. It's the guy who sold me that single told me that you were on it. Were you at all, or was it just the song you were...
No, I wasn't on it.
Okay, well, he's...
friends of mine.
Well, that's the thing was, he said Danny O'Keefe appears on it because he knew the guys and it was his song. I just figured it was from that era.
I don't think I did. Maybe if I did, I came in and sang harmony with him or something. Or maybe I played guitar, but I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to find out.
Whatever it was, I mean, they were friends of mine. It was something that would be the most obscure.
What year was that?
65, maybe? 65? 66 at the very latest, I think. But I don't really know. You can. The record should have a copyright.
I'll have to check. I don't think so. I was really, really puzzled by it, you know, because I knew it was a Seattle label, Jordan. Sure, you know, I knew it was from that, from the Sonics and all those people.
Yeah, same guy that releases the Seattle tapes, which I
have there.
Which are basically illegal. They're song dubs. Yeah, it's just a question of whether I had enough money to sue him, and I don't really have the money.
Well, have you seen any money off that record yet? Or?
Not done. The guy got me out of jail a couple times, and he gave me a guitar, so I'm not really willing to push it, because he's not making any real money off it. But they're really horrendous, and they're something that only diehard fans could appreciate by putting in their catalog to chronicle how I learned to write music.
It's
an awful performance record.
Matter of fact, someone told me about two records before the... whatever the one is with the Atlantic Atco one with the cowboy hat on the front.
Yeah.
That you made two records in the Northeast area, did you? One called Introducing Danny O'Keefe.
That's the same record as the Seattle tapes.
It is the same thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, did it come out way back when, or?
It never came out. It wasn't designed to come out. It was a.
Well, you never released then officially any album until that one on Atlantic.
No, I mean, I was the lead singer in a group called Calliope.
Okay, I got that.
That was an awful record, too, and I just happened to be a lead singer, and I didn't have a lot of control over or in the group. And as soon as I heard the record, I left. It was awful.
But I noticed you redid one. You redid the Atlas Shrug.
Atlas, because I always liked the way Atlas sounded, and live, even in that band, which was a fairly bad band, Atlas was a powerful tune that worked. It got fairly hokey rendition on that record. It got a real Buddha treatment.
I remember you weren't too pleased. You said you got paid $125 or $150 for it or something. That was it, and that's all
no,
you
no,
ever...
No, we got more money than that, but I mean, I think we split $5,000 four ways or five ways, which I was, you know, that was a relatively decent advance at the time.
What have you been doing then, basically, since the Warner Brothers... last album. Have you just been playing live and living off that?
No, I haven't been playing live at all. Last spring I went to Germany. Some people had a couple Germans, a German couple, wrote me letters and called me on the phone and talked me into it, and they booked the dates. And it was great. I had a wonderful time in Germany. I played in Berlin, met Fassbinder before he died, and it was good. I want to go back to Germany. I enjoyed those people a lot.
What were the places like? Were they like folk coffee houses, or sort of like this, or I mean, or concert halls even, or
some were small concert halls, cultural centers, where they'd rent a PA, and people would come in, like, you know, like a little small concert, maybe 200-300 would be the largest that I played there. The place in Berlin was Berlin's leading club for that kind of thing, called Quasimodo, and this was a great club. I loved it a lot, and that was real good. The guy who owned the club was a great guy, and hired some musicians. Gave them the tapes to listen to. They listened to them. They had most of them down. They asked me which ones I wanted to play. Took them about a day or 2 days to learn the songs. Came back and we rehearsed for 2 days, for 2 hours each day.
And they didn't know what song on the album you were going to pick initially when they were listening to
them. No, they just listened to the whole thing. They got familiar with the tapes, and then they made little charts the day that we rehearsed, or the first day that we picked songs. And then they took the tape and listened to it and against the charts and learned all the parts, and came back, and over the weekend we rehearsed and played two sets. The German clubs are, the way they work basically is that you come up and play 45 minutes, take a half hour break and come back again and play for another 45 minutes or an hour, however long the people want you to play. The German audiences were good, considering that everybody thinks that the Europeans understand a lot of English, and they don't really. They understand the basics, you know.
Speaking of which, how come not England? How come you didn't try?
England doesn't have much of a market, to be honest with you.
Really? Even for the coffee houses going up there with... Because I know Loudon Wainwright was always playing there every time I turned around, and the NME.
I have to find an agent. And in Germany, I just, this couple.
Yeah.
Hans and Dolores Kohl. They just booked Germany. They didn't know.
Was that Kohl, C-O-L-E?
K-O-H-L.
Oh, K-O-H. Oh,
like
right.
Helmut. Or like, I don't know. Helmut Kohl, I think, is the guy who's the new Prime Minister or Chancellor of Germany.
I want to ask you, are you married?
No, I'm not.
Okay, on the tape, there's something where you talk about sitting watching the thing that inspired Keith. And you said you were sitting with someone there. I thought you said I was sitting with my daughter.
Yes, I have a daughter, but I'm not married.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, is she in Seattle?
Yeah.
Okay. Was that recently?
That was 2 years ago.
Well, I mean that you, that show was on.
It was this spring. The German show?
No. The TV show you were watching.
Oh, no, it was on 60 Minutes. It's been over 2 years ago.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. Because, yeah. I mean, that was a great story. That tune
very
was
powerful
real
piece of film.
Well, it's a very powerful song. And I wanted to ask you, there's the De Niro lines in there.
No, they're not De Niro's lines. They're Keith's lines.
Well, I mean,
what Keith said. Yes, he knew nothing about the Taxi Driver. That's what he said.
Oh, so that was actually from the film.
Said.
Okay, I thought you were just interpreting
that. That's okay. What everybody thought when they heard it, and that's fine, because that's what the Taxi Driver was. He was the alienated
right.
American.
Well, have you heard The Clash? On their new record, they use De Niro. He comes in and speaks a line from Taxi Cab.
No.
From Taxi Driver, not Taxi Cab.
No, and I've probably listened to it at some point. I like The Clash, but I haven't heard it yet.
It's pretty neat. They go, it's something about, I think it's about the Red Guardian Angels or something. And they say, who prophesies these people? Travis, come in, Travis. And De Niro comes in and says, at the night, everyone, all these kooks come out, blah, 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 blah. Let's see, where should we start from? I guess, basically, background history when you were born. You grew up with your grandparents, didn't you?
No.
I guess, there was something Rolling Stone. I guess about, you went to a boys' school for a while, military school?
Military school in St. Paul. And I lived with my grandmother, because my father was in the process of dying of cancer, so they were selling the house in Washington and Washington State and moving out, so I came to go to school while they were still trying to sell the house.
And then you went
from... I'm a Northwesterner. I've lived there all my life, although I have lived for brief periods of time other places. I'm a Northwesterner all my years.
Okay. What do you... what was the first move then? You didn't release any record then until the Atlantic one. But you were just, playing clubs around there, and you did the demos and stuff for this guy?
Yeah, the guy had a publishing company, and I'd had a contract, record contract with him that called for 4 releases a year or something like that, and that's... We didn't release all those songs. There were probably... Through that whole period, there were 4 songs, maybe 6 at the very most, that were recorded with the idea of being masters.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them were songs that I would come in with my guitar and I'd sit on a stool in front of the microphone and I would put down for a publishing demo so that a copyist could take the songs off the tapes and make lead sheets for copyright purposes. There was never any idea that, or any suggestion that they would ever be released or that there was any legal right for them to be released. They were not, they had no union contracts and I was a union player. They're not only illegal, but they're morally irresponsible on the man's part. It's something that happens to naive artists who don't have the money or the experience to know how to get lawyers to write contracts that provide those legal recourses in the event that someone does try to screw them. It's happened to Jimi Hendrix, it's happened to almost everybody who makes that mistake, and it's a real corruption on the part of people who have a little more money and a little more power than the artists.
I know, I remember you saying something about you would have sued Rolling Stone over the article they wrote that you weren't too happy about a couple of things that said in there.
Well, there's no point in suing anyone who at some point may be extremely influential in your career or even talk about suing them. It's probably a rash remark on my part. Whether they were inaccurate or not, all they're required to do is print a retraction, which I'm sure they would have gladly done. I think it's extremely important when you do interviews that you do them with tape recorders so that you have accuracy.
To
be quoted out of context is always bad, but to be misquoted is worse.
The main thing I think when I listen to your stuff, including this new stuff, is are you out there pitching your songs? I mean, because you've had some really top-notch people. You had Jackson Browne, Waylon Jennings, Elvis Presley. I mean, what was that like having Presley, you know, someone of that figure, knowing that you had one of your songs recorded by him? You know, very. How many other people will ever have make that claim?
It's high praise, high compliment, whatever. It was definitely a thrill. Not the biggest thrill. Elvis was not my favorite artist out of all the milieu that he came up through.
Mm-hmm.
Gene Vincent and Carl Perkins and Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard were and even Buddy Holly were stronger artists as far as I was
concerned. True, right. Well, but he was pretty much a pretty image.
Yeah. Elvis from the Sun Sessions was as great as any of those, but he was not better than any of those. He only made more money.
Well, he also didn't write any of his own stuff, whereas almost all those other people, except for Gene Vincent, really wasn't much of a writer.
Yeah, but I mean, in that period, that's really not here or there. It's just, it was the quality and intensity that they brought to their performance that made them great artists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Buddy Holly brought his own intensity, regardless of whether he wrote the material or not. I mean, that's
right.
Another benefit, you know, in listening to him, is to realize that he was the writer of that. But it could have been written by someone else. It still would be as good. Roy Orbison the same way. I mean, Roy Orbison was a great singer and performer, and still is.
Right. Okay, so what was the, I guess, what are the big thrills of your career so far?
I mean, in terms of people recording my material?
Recording, I guess, I mean, was when Good Time Charlie hit, was that, were you expecting that to be a hit single, or did you say?
Yes, it was a hit song. It would have been a hit song for anyone who recorded it.
But you had recorded it a couple times before, and it hadn't really taken on. I mean, the bards did it, and it didn't go anywhere, and you had it on the first album. And
it wasn't the right timing, for one thing, and it wasn't the right performance, which is always important. Timing is almost as important as the performance.
How about the changes from the first album version to the second? Did you influence that, or was that mainly producers?
I influenced in the sense that I probably was able to sing and perform it better, but also Arif Martin, who was a great arranger and producer, was extremely instrumental in making the version more economical. First version had excesses that seemed appropriate 2 years prior. It was recorded in 69.
Mm-hmm.
That first album came out in 70. You learn from mistakes. If you don't, you know, you're dead. I mean, some people like that first album, but it isn't my favorite at all.
I like the Drover on it. I think that's great.
Yeah, it was one of those albums that got good reviews and
didn't sell.
Well, none of them really sold well.
Are you bitter about that?
I'm not bitter about it.
Well, I mean, just the fact that
I enjoy being able to play my music in front of people. I think that's no matter what level you play it.
But the fact that you turn on the radio and there's so much crap and so many people who are so-so writers, and you think, Jesus, why shouldn't I be up there? That doesn't bother you?
No.
Okay, well, because it bothers me, even though it's not my songs. I think, geez, you know, here's Danny O'Keefe doing this stuff that ought to be on there, songs that say something, and, you know, you turn on, there's some air supply or something like that.
People support it. And evidently, it reaches a broad enough spectrum. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I think is pure crap. But the stuff that I happen to like personally doesn't sell well either.
What do you listen to as far as?
I listen to a lot of the ECM jazz records. John Garberick and Bill Connor in particular are my favorites. I like a couple records of Pat Metheny. Some of the older Miles catalog, In a Silent Way, Kind of Blue in particular. Those are two of my all-time favorite records.
Anyone in your type of field, singer-songwriter, like Newman, Wainwright, Tom Waits?
No, not really, other than just in passing. I mean, I appreciate and respect a lot of them, Randy Newman in particular, but there's no point in listening to them very seriously because I don't really want to be influenced by them.
That's
I'd rather be influenced by Kurt Weill or feel people like Edith Piaf or Billie Holiday. Feel is better, you know, to incorporate someone who is outside your own, whatever, the word, milieu.
Mm-hmm.
It's better, I think, to be influenced by someone else and bring something that's a different kind of influence rather than just reworking someone else's phrase until it becomes a cliché, you know.
most guitar players tend to do that, electric guitar players. And they're the same cliches over and over again in rock and roll. And they're okay, they work on stage for Flash and all that, but they're not interesting, you know? I mean, I'd rather have Keith Richards' sort of half-assed approach to playing lead than a lot of super hot guitar players that can play Flash, but they don't play any meat.
Yeah, well, sort of like Alvin Lee going...
which is very, plays better than most of the stuff that...
Yeah, but the stuff I always thought was really... Say, like Zal from The Spoonful, I always thought...
I never knew that it was really Zal playing. That's the only thing I've never been sure of, whether it was Sebastian or whether it was Zal.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Zal. Yeah. Just from the fact that he's gone on to play lead, or he was playing for Chris Christopherson after The Spoonful. Yeah,
great.
In a while. And
well, if that's true, I thought he was very tasty. I love the ideas that that band had, and I'm sorry that they got in that...
The dope
trouble at that point. I mean, if they stuck it out, they would have been a legendary band.
Well, I think you'd be amazed. I put down that I wanted tapes by them, and I don't have any outside of like an interview that one of the guys did. And I got loads of people writing saying, "Do you have any of these tapes? You know, I'll trade you this and this and this," but no one had anything to trade there. You know, do you realize that there is a whole background that there are, I guess, people like me that are certain cities that are really into everything you put out?
Well, yeah, I have a pretty good time when I play, you know, like I haven't played on any kind of a circuit for 5 years, so now this is the first time, but every place that I've played this time, I've had excellent response.
I know you just did Gertie's Folk City, that's where I first saw you coming back East Coast.
Yeah, it was great. Got great reviews and had a great audience. Boston was the same way, Washington, D.C. was wonderful, Buffalo has been wonderful. I'm not playing a lot of places because I'm trying to build a circuit back up again.
You're not... playing a lot of places? I don't understand. I thought you would...
Well, I just play places for reviews, and then I take the reviews and...
Oh, show.
Get bookings off
okay,
of that,
I see.
You know. It takes a while. It takes, about a year to build the circuit back up again in all the parts of the country, and until you have enough response in the different parts of the country, the record won't do you a lot of good, because you have to have people who will call in and ask for it to be played, so you have to reintroduce yourself again.
Have you ever thought of going with like in a smaller label, say like Rounder? I know McGuinn, for instance, was offered some contract with some label out of Baltimore, because he doesn't have a contract either at the moment.
It's very hard to get a contract right now.
Well, he was offered this company in Baltimore, and he turned it down. Now, I don't know if it's a thing. I always felt that he was always sort of suffering from the fact that he kicked Crosby out of the group, and then Crosby... zoomed up to this mega star type status, even though I didn't think his material was anything great.
The Byrds did well after David Crosby left. They had Clarence White. Clarence White was one of the greatest guitar
players. In terms of success, though, commercial, the hits had stopped pretty much.
Well, I don't know. Those records, all the people that I know sure liked the Sweetheart of the Rodeo and all those records.
Well, I don't know. It didn't sell that well, though. You know, it's a great record. It's a classic record. It was the forerunner of this whole
Absolutely.
Charlie Daniels thing. And I've sat down and I've talked with...
Well, I mean, sometimes you have to settle for that. I mean, that period passed for them, and they reinvented an approach to country music that everyone else studied, and in the process, you got country rock. I mean, Alabama owes as much to the Byrds from that Clarence White, Roger McGuinn period as they do to any of the country, Hart, Bob Wills, or any of those people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a big debt owed to the Byrds, and a lot of people are reluctant to pay it to them because they were Hollywood guys.
Yeah.
Hippies, you know.
Yeah, I think that's part of the thing that happened with
getting
booed off the Grand Ole Opry stage.
And any more than Eddie Rabbit is a country guy, you know. I mean, he's no country guy. He's from Brooklyn, you know. It doesn't matter where you're from. You play the music that you feel. I think now that it's easier for those guys to get recognition, but it's been only in the last 5 years that Nashville and the country people have been willing to give it to them.
Have you ever thought of going that route? You know, like saying, leaning more towards, like you did a great version of Honky Tonkin' that I thought was...
Sure. But see, I don't see American music as being a regional experience. I grew up listening to jazz and country music. And I'm not a good old boy from the South. I'm from the Northwest all my life. But the experience that I play is an American experience. I don't want to be tagged, corn pone eater, chitlin eater, or whatever, to be put in a bag is a big mistake. I'd rather make less money and play the kind of music that I want. I mean, I can go down there and cut country records, you know.
Well, I'm
Billy
not
Sherrill
talking
produce
about
me and make hits, but it's who cares, you know? That's not what I play.
I'm not talking so much. I got to make sure this run out. Pandering to the trend. What's sort of like going in and saying, okay.
Well, but also the changes that I tend to play on guitar and the chords that I like won't go through country charts. Well, nobody plays those, and Willie gets away with them only once in a while because he's borrowing them from another period, which was the Bob Wills influence, country swing period that did allow some of those nice.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of the chords. I look up there and I can't tell. Is it a lot of jazz chords and stuff?
They're just made up chords.
What sounds good?
Yeah. You know, you take a regular chord and take it apart and stretch it and play it until you can sing a note that works through a progression, a sequence. But the whole point of writing songs is the grand experiment one has with oneself to find new pathways all the time. And to be locked into something for financial reasons alone, I mean, I can do advertising for money, or I can, you know.
That's what I'm trying to do. I have that in the background. I can't get a job in that at all. Work as
well,
a security guard.
I sing well, so I can do those other kinds of things when I
do
I need
jingles
to.
And stuff you're talking about.
Sure.
Have you done any stuff along those lines for anything that we might hear out here? Or?
Only some background things. I have one that I'm singing lead on for a reach out ad for the telephone company that will probably start in first of the year that does have a country voice in it.
And you're singing
lead.
The background?
No, I'm singing lead.
Wow.
And you probably hear it. It has a trucker on it. You know, I'm singing the trucker song. It's all right. Nice piece of music. A friend of mine wrote the lyric, and I just came in and sang it. It's easy to do, and it pays well, and it allows me to come and do what I really love to do without having to pander, as she said. I don't want to.
Yeah.
It's not interesting to me. I like the people that I play for.
Although this place really.
But the people
tough
that are here,
to hear you.
Well, it's a tough room to play, but the people who are here are people who would be in any club. I mean, they came primarily to hear me, other than the people
right.
who are standing at the bar.
Right.
It's great.
I think this is just about going out here.
So, ask me just a couple more, and let me go up and see those people, because otherwise I won't get a chance to see them when we split after the show.
Okay. Yeah. Try and get someone here.
Concorde flights were disrupted. The United States Army has concluded its investigation in the case of Private Joseph White, with the decision that he did indeed defect of his own free will to the communist nation of North Korea on August 28th. White was considered an average soldier with a clean military record and no problems with drugs or alcohol. And his defection, though accepted by the Army and his parents in St. Louis, still leaves the question why totally unanswered at this time. Mark?
President Reagan, who took a tough stand against the striking air traffic controllers last year, is ready to take on the striking railroad engineers. So far, the two-day-old strike has not affected our area, but out west, there's no freight or very little freight moving. The president's asked the Congress to impose a settlement with the full force of law. Transportation Secretary Drew Lewis says the strike will have 500,000 people out of work in a week, 1 million in 2 weeks. Lewis says he's optimistic the Congress may...